And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Each week, Ray spotlights in-depth interviews with legendary and up-and-coming authors and music artists. Ray also features the movers and the shakers of the music and publishing industries and suggests important methods for getting the most out of your public relations and marketing needs. Please welcome music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello again, everyone. I'm Ray Shasho, broadcasting from BBS Radio 1, and welcome to the show where we spotlight legendary and up-and-coming music artists and authors. Brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552. Or visit www.publicityworksagency.com. And remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Jesse Colin Young, critically acclaimed solo artist and lead singer of the legendary classic rock band The Youngbloods, took the nation by storm when The Youngbloods' single Get Together became a worldwide top 10 hit and a prominent soundtrack for Peace. After seven group releases, Young began the production of more than 15 acclaimed solo albums, including Song for Julie, Light Shine, Songbird, and a live album with his great touring band titled On the Road. In 2005, he released the most comprehensive collection of his music to date, The Very Best of Jesse Colin Young. The best time ever, first time ever, songs from his solo career as well as hits from the Youngbloods were placed in two CD package. In 2014, Jesse became interested in the Saratoga War Horse Project for Veterans and made a DVD in support of that organization called Out of the Darkness. It is available on iTunes, Amazon, Google, and DVD on his website. In 2012, Jesse was diagnosed with Lyme's disease and was unable to tour. In that time, he created the Couch series with Labrador on YouTube. He performed a variety of songs, new and old, solo acoustic or with friends, and always with his famous Silver Lab, Django. It was a way to still reach his audience without traveling due to the complications of Lyme's disease. Jesse's musical accomplishments are many, including performing with Led Zeppelin, The Grateful Dead, and Janis Joplin in 1969, touring with Crosby, Stills, and Nash and Young in the summer of 1974, and performing with Billy Joel, the Doobie Brothers, and the Beach Boys. Jesse has also shared the stage with comics like Martin Mull. Other performances include going to the prisons of South Dakota and Minnesota to sing for American Indian rights with actor and musician Floyd Westerman. As a member of the Youngbloods in 1969, they were the only band to walk off the Johnny Carson show, which was the definitive gateway to superstardom. The story is worth a listen. Youngblood's version of Get Together has been heard by millions from the Forrest Gump soundtrack in 1994, Cats and Dogs, Revenge of Kitty Galore, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, The Simpsons' Oh Brother, Where Bart Thou, and Tree of Horror 2, and South Park's Smug Alert. Get Together commercials include the Pepsi commercial for the 1995 Super Bowl, the Loves commercial in 2010, and Kentucky Fried Chicken in 2014. Darkness, written by Jesse, was in Jack the Bear, was the theme song for the James Cameron movie Ghost of the Abyss in 2003, and was in the trailer TV series Bloodline. A cover of the song by Robert Plant won the Grammy for Best Rock Vocal in 2002. It remains a popular cover song for many bands. 2016 and 2017 will be productive times for Jesse, starting tomorrow, as a matter of fact. He will begin the re-release of his 1970s LP catalog, starting with Song for Julie, on Audio Fidelity. Jesse is currently working on a collection of new recordings to be released in 2017 and will plan a tour in the fall. Throughout his professional life of recording and touring, Jesse has always taken the time to dedicate his life to giving back to the world. He has performed on behalf of organizations ranging from the Dream Foundation and Saratoga Warhorse to Prep Fest and the Kona Pacific Waldorf School, which is now the Kona Pacific Charter School, holding environmental accountability, veteran support, and quality education as moral code of action. Jesse remains committed and active as an individual and performer. It is my great pleasure to welcome singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, and entrepreneur, the legendary Jesse Colin Young to the Ray Shasho Show. Hello, Jesse.
Hey, Ray. It's good to hear your voice again.
Yes, it is. We had a great conversation last time. I believe we talked the summer of 2014, and you were still hurting pretty bad from the Lyme disease. We talked about being a chronic Lyme disease sufferer, and since then, Avril Lavigne has also opened up about her battle with the disease. She said that she was bedridden for 5 months. The singer said she thinks a tick bit her sometime in the spring of 2014. So a lot of people have kind of admitted that they do have a problem, and it's I'm glad we had that conversation because a lot's happened since then.
Yes, I think more people, those of us who talk about it, I think do the earliest do it so that others will know, because it's being undiagnosed with this disease, as I was for probably, I don't know, 15 years, 20 years, can be a real nightmare. And so bringing, all the artists and people who bring forward their, when they figure out they have Lyme's disease,
exactly,
which takes some doing, it helps others. I know from when I started talking about it, probably... Actually, the reason I did the interview with you was because I thought I should be talking about Lyme disease. I know there are thousands of people out here in the world, tens of thousands, undiagnosed. So that was how you and I got started.
Well, that article drew a lot of response. I mean, everybody was wanting to know all kinds of things from that interview. It was... So I'm glad it happened, and like I said, I think it helped a lot of people.
Yes, and for me it was the beginning of then, once I did that interview, then I started to talk about it on Facebook, and I've spoken to hundreds, of folks who've had all kind of different experiences with the disease, and I think the most important thing that came forward was folks who get it treated right away, either because they had a bullseye rash or actually saw the tick on them. Those folks who take doxycycline right off the bat for a month or two or whatever it is, they walk away from it. And those who don't, who like myself are undiagnosed for 5, 10, 20 years, there is no cure at this point. They don't walk away. Chronic Lyme, there's no cure for it, although managing it, certainly with my doctor, Dr. Richard Horowitz, is getting better and better, and I think actually he's Avril's doctor. Also, I'm trying to think of my favorite duo from the 80s.
Hall & Oates, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Darryl Hall.
Darryl Hall. Darryl
was the was the first one I ever heard talk about it.
It's amazing. The first thing you have to figure out is I'm not going crazy. I'm not losing my mind. Because we were talking earlier that somebody that you knew was actually. I don't know if she got admitted or she was thinking about going into a mental hospital.
She was about to admit herself. She was a river guide in the Grand Canyon, and then just lost her energy and her body started aching, and then she started going crazy, and I've been there. It's it's pretty scary, and she was... had no idea what was going on, was about to check her in, suffered into a mental hospital. And she saw a post that I did about where I identified the lab called IGenex in California that specializes in tick-borne diseases. And she went in and she called them up and got a kit and did a blood test and said, "Wow, I'm not nuts. I have Lyme disease." And she's a young singer-songwriter, and now kind of back at it. She was able to get treatment from my doctor, and I think they're even writing songs together.
Awesome. Well, officials from the Federal Centers for Disease and Prevention said, now this is from, I think, 13, that about 300,000 people in the United States are diagnosed with Lyme disease each year. So that's,
right.
That's a lot of people. And I'm sure it could have, you know, who knows, might have doubled or tripled by now. But here's a list of other celebrities that are known to have contracted the disease. Alec Baldwin, George Bush, as a matter of fact, Yolanda Foster, Rebecca Wells, Amy Tan, Ben Stiller, Parker Posey, Jane Alexander, Rebecca Wells, Christy Turlington, Karen Allen, Jamie Lynn Sigler, Alice Walker, Ashley Olsen, Jennifer Capriati, the tennis player, Richard Gere, Debbie Gibson, and Daryl Hall. Now, that's a pretty big list.
Yes, well, that's just celebrities, because they're... Boy,
yeah.
I think for all the people that are diagnosed, there are probably 10 times as many people who are not diagnosed. So, like 200,000 perhaps a year diagnosed. I think now they say 300,000. I think that means, I'm guessing that means 3 million undiagnosed, thinking they have a flu, thinking they have... lupus, thinking they have, and being diagnosed with these wrong diagnoses just because the medical profession has not really made it a, perhaps they are now, but, you know, in the last 10 years, they were not making it an important area of study for young doctors. So what we call Lyme literate doctors are
right.
They're hard to find.
The other disease that sometimes is misdiagnosed in the beginning stages could be MS. You know, and that could
yes,
be actually Lyme disease.
I've talked to people. Yeah, I've talked to people who were diagnosed with MS and found out, you know, years into it that it was in fact Lyme disease.
Well, you're obviously have gotten better because you're going on tour next year. So tell me how your improvement. What made the sudden, you know, feeling better thing? Just keeping on the meds for all the time?
No, new drugs.
New
drugs. I'm taking a drug that's not necessarily new. It was developed for leprosy.
Really?
Yeah. My doctor has people who do research all the time trying to find, trying to identify drugs that kill the persisters, because you can knock these the line back with a variety of antibiotics, but there are persisters that then come back. And, you know, when you stop the antibiotics, they start coming back, and then 2 months later, you're sick again. So this drug... it's called Dapsone, and it's working wonderfully. It's better than anything ever. And I know Richard, who wrote a book called, was it called Why Am I Not Getting Better?
Yeah, Why Can't I Get Better?
Why Can't I Get Better? That's
right.
Dr. Harwood's book.
Yep.
He's just done a whole redo of the book. He told me the other day it went to the publisher, and he said... every secret that I've learned about it, including the drugs that seem to work much better than others, are in the book. I don't know when it will be out, the new version of it, but yeah, he's a wonderful man, and he's just working on it. He said, I shared all my secrets. Maybe I'll be able to retire.
Well, I'll definitely promote his book on all my sites. And, you know, if we can get him on the show, that'll be great, too. You know, people need to know. And you know, his book should be a bestseller. I mean, that's, you know.
Yeah, he does a lot of, you should talk to him. I should, I should give you his number, and because I know he's done TV stuff, he's done radio stuff.
Yep.
You know, he goes around the world teaching doctors in Europe and I mean, he's been as far as China, teaching doctors about Lyme disease and how to treat it.
Now, you said the disease can't go away completely. Is that true?
Chronic Lyme, which I don't know how they define it, except that it won't go away. With the drugs and the normal long courses, you know, I mean, my first course of antibiotics was like a year, and that certainly killed it back, but that was with kind of conventional antibiotics that we use for lung infections and all kinds of bacterial infections.
Right.
So at this point, there is no cure. There's no drug that you can take. And then chronic Lyme, if you've had it 5, 10, 15, 20 years, you're kind of stuck with it. But this is, I haven't felt this good in decades.
I'm really happy. Yeah.
I'm glad to be on. It's a constant regimen of antibiotics, but my body seems to be able to tolerate it. And it's so wonderful to have my mind working again.
Well,
and my strength
thing.
Coming up. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't dream of touring unless I was getting well.
Because it
just takes a lot of energy.
So you're working out as well, right? Is that another thing?
Oh, yeah.
Three times a week with
a wonderful trainer here in South Carolina. And that really helps. Lyme disease doesn't like exercise, so.
Well, down here in Florida, we've got the Zika virus now to contend with. I don't know where that's headed. They're trying to get funding for that to combat it. They haven't gotten it yet.
Yeah. So, the touring really is just a result of my son, T, his name is Tristan, but nobody could ever pronounce it, so he just decided years ago to tell people his name was T. He graduated Berklee College of Music this last spring, and I went up, my wife and I went up to his senior recital, which was, maybe a month before the graduation. And I was just blown away by these young men. And, of course, there are a lot of women who go there, too, but there weren't any in T's band. How incredible. These were all either undergrads or guys who had just graduated. And I think in the back of my mind, this little light bulb lit up and said, God, I wonder what my music could sound like. And the new music that I'm writing with these young men playing it, and women. And so we've just, I just decided that, and T said, well, Dad, you want to put a band together with young Berklee musicians? I'll help you. So we've started. Just yesterday, we decided on a drummer. T's a bass player. So we have, between me playing acoustic guitar and the bass and drums, we have the beginnings of what will be a touring band, because I was crazy enough to accept an invitation to South by Southwest this year. So I've got my work cut out for me, putting a band together and getting them ready for Austin. You know, that's in March.
Right.
In Austin, yeah.
So you got, all these guys are Berklee grads that are in the band now.
Yes, and I mean, we may end up even with some undergrads.
That's pretty cool.
There's some incredible musicians in that school. And they're from all over the world. I think about half of T's graduating class is from outside the United States. In his band, the sax player was from Colombia. as in Columbia, South America, instead of Columbia, right. South Carolina, here's. The organist from Malaysia, the keyboardist from the Bahamas.
Wow. Got the United Nations there.
and the drummer and the bass player from South Carolina. Where I happen to live now, so we kind of, the South Carolina vibes were in there, so.
Yeah.
But
is this going to be the touring band as well?
Yes. Well, that's okay. Really what we're putting together. We'll see. If it's, I won't do any long tours, but I will need to play live. I haven't, I've played 2 or 3 times in the past 5 years.
Right.
I just didn't have the strength for it. And the Saratoga Warhorse was one of the shows, and we were able to raise a huge amount of money in that show, put a lot of veterans through the program.
Exactly.
I was actually, I'm not a veteran, but I, Bob Nevins, the man who kind of invented the program, he was a Vietnam medevac pilot, and he said, Jess, you were there with me through the whole war.
Exactly.
In my helicopter.
Yep.
And he wanted me to go through the program, so I did. It's a couple-day program. I've written a song about it. I hope we'll be able to get it ready. It's a beautiful meeting of veterans and thoroughbred horses who've been, have seen better days and who've been just kind of thrown aside.
Right.
It's beautiful. If you go to Saratoga Warhorse on the, you'll see. On the internet, you'll see some videos of vets who talk about what it's like.
Right. Yeah, we talked about this before. It's a fantastic program. Just briefly tell the audience about the Sarasota Warhorse Project, Saratoga.
Yeah, it started in Saratoga, New York. That's where Bob lives. And there's a racetrack there, so... thoroughbreds, someone might pay $150,000 or $200,000 for a colt that comes out of certain kind of breeding. And then, if by the end of the second year, if they're not making decent money, they just sell them off or give them away. So he, after Vietnam, he said it took him about 10 years to get his life back in some kind of balance.
Mm-hmm.
And then he became an airline pilot for a couple decades. And then somehow, he's not a rider, but somehow he got interested in natural horsemanship. And he took this program. And that is the basis of Saratoga Warhorses. They teach. And this protocol that you go through with a horse, you don't ride it, you lead it, you make it canter around you in different directions, and this is in an enclosed ring, and it's I think for people, I had horses when I was young and I rode as a young man, and so maybe not as scary for me, but you get in there in a clothespin by yourself with a 1,200-pound animal who's and galloping, and it could be pretty. But the whole protocol is designed for you and the horse to meet, and the horse accepts you as the head of the leader of the herd,
right?
And that. Meeting of I've been there. That man and horse meeting is like I had no idea that horses were such huge. They are huge spirit animals. They have really deep souls, and they offer this trust after what, in half an hour, And I think the trust of a beast like that, so powerful and so loving, it begins a healing in the veterans that go through the program that drugs and psychotherapy and other forms of a lot of these vets that I talk to who come through the, you know, they tried everything, every veterans program that has been available to them. And this, this turns the key in the door to a new life for a lot of them. It's a beautiful to watch and beautiful to take part in.
It's a great program, and I'm going to post the on all my websites. I'm going to put the link.
Good.
So everybody.
Yes,
can,
because we have our own satellite program here in Aiken, South Carolina, and that was the second. Let's see. That was the first satellite program. The first program was in Saratoga itself, and Bob was supporting it with his own money. Just because he thought, this is powerful, you know, this might help other veterans. So he, and then it expanded, and a woman named Ann Campbell, who is from Aiken and part of the Thoroughbred world, she and her husband, Cott, had a horse, have had horses over the years that won, you know, big Thoroughbred races. So there, she just fell in love with the program when she was up in Saratoga and said, Aiken, which is this little town I live in South Carolina, it's very, it's a very horsey place. A lot of
very horsey.
Polo. Yeah, very horsey. We have 50 polo fields or something like that. I live on the edge of a 2,000-acre woods where people ride thoroughbreds for training, and they do fox hunting and all kinds of horse stuff. And so a perfect community. That first show that Ann put on where I played, and we made that video of it, was the first big fundraiser for Saratoga War Horse. I think we walked away with $250,000 clear.
Wow.
And that's enough to put several hundred veterans through the program. So that was a big thrill for me.
Jesse, thank you so much for all your involvement with the veterans. And there's a statement on your website. It says, Jesse holds environmental accountability, veteran support, and quality education as a moral code of action. To me, that's a very powerful and very true statement about you. And, you know, we thank you for all you do because, you know, not everybody has the will or the time or, you know, the commitment to do all these things that you do. And we, you know, especially when you have Lyme disease. You know?
Yeah, sometimes I think people just don't take the time. And I had worked with veterans after the war, after the Vietnam War, and then I kind of drifted away from it. Nobody came to me and asked me. And I waited for decades, and then all of a sudden somebody asked me, and here came this program, and Bob, who created the program, was instantly my my brother. You know how it is when you meet someone sometimes in the first 20 minutes, you know that they're your brother or your sister. And so I said, you know, whatever you need me to do, I'll do. And we gave some money, and then, of course, they asked me to sing. And I said, well, shit, I haven't sung in 4 years. Okay. I'll get a couple guys, and so I practiced for 4 months. It took me 4 months, you know, every day to get my strength back, to get my both my playing and my singing back to, up to speed. But that was that was last year, or was it last winter or 2 winters ago? So, yeah, that was probably the prelude, being able to actually do that and come off the stage and not collapse.
Right.
I said,
exactly.
Oh, shit. You know, I may have Lyme disease, but I can still play. Now,
exactly.
I couldn't go out and do a month or two of touring, but
right.
I think it rekindled my desire to play. And now, mm-hmm. then I saw my son in his recital, and those guys just blew me away.
Yep.
And so here
it's
I go.
Cool. Yeah, it's going to be cool to have your son in the band, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. I played with, I have two older sons. They play in the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
In a band called Beso Negro, which is a it's a gypsy jazz band.
Yeah, I did
and
listen
we,
to them. Yeah,
yeah,
they're great.
I toured with them,
mm-hmm.
with those two boys. Long, yeah, back in 2000, maybe to 2003. Yeah, we toured. They're a bass player and a drummer, and we toured as a trio in that time and made a record together. So this is kind of here I go again.
There you go. Now the new album, you're still working on that, and it's going to be released next year sometime?
Oh, yeah. We haven't even, we haven't even begun. I'm still writing it, but
okay.
We had just in the last week, because T brought his one of his favorite drummers in, who happens to be here in the South, in Atlanta.
Right.
Both of them graduates from last year from Berkeley, and so yesterday we just spent for the first time 4 hours working on my new songs. There's about a half a dozen of them, and yeah, the beginnings of that is the beginnings of making a record, because mm-hmm. they are so well schooled and so disciplined.
Yep.
It's amazing. That's what I'm hoping for. We'll put this band together. We'll play a few shows. We'll go to South by Southwest.
Right.
And then we'll say, or I'll say to myself, guys, I love this. Let's make a record.
Well, you know, the whole world is waiting for this.
Well, I wasn't sure I had one in me. But
yeah.
God bless Richard Horowitz and the drugs, and they're yeah. working, and
that's great. That's great news.
And I am blessed to be healing, because boy, unhealed for a long time,
yeah.
And I'm glad those days are over. They're gone now.
Well, look, you're close to Florida, so make sure you hit Florida on, you know, when you.
Yes, we might even come there in February.
Awesome. I'll be there.
Because February is, you know, when we're just putting the band together, because
yep.
New England, where most of these young people are, is a nightmare
right.
in February. It's like black ice.
Yeah.
And so we may be in February, and we may be in Florida.
That'll be great.
Oh, I haven't played there.
Hmm? Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just thinking I hadn't been in Florida in 10 or 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think the last time I was there was right before my house burned down. Oh,
yeah.
That's 20 years. 1995, yeah.
And you built a new studio since then. So you're, that's right, right? Didn't you build a new studio after the old studio kind of?
Yep, actually all the studios have survived.
My house burned down
in 95.
Okay.
My godson is still living in that studio and operating it. It survived. The house, you know, four-story house burned down to a
right.
foot of ash. But and there's a studio in Hawaii where we lived for a long
mm-hmm.
time. That's kind of inoperable now, but it's the building is there. It just rust never sleeps. And so digital recording would be perfect over there, because you don't need all these metal connections,
right?
The old-fashioned stuff with it just kind of rusted beyond help.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a little studio here, but we'll go to Nashville, or we'll go somewhere. I will find us a producer who wants to, and we'll go to his favorite studio, wherever that is, whether it's in New York.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh, or I don't know, you know. Actually, Song for Julie, I found this wonderful group of folks in Nashville, and I remastered song for Julie there. They're called, their studio's called Welcome to 1979, because they use a lot of old gear, and they have, and a resusticated Neumann lathe, which is one of the lathes that I cut Julie on,
right?
Original.
Yep.
You know, I didn't cut it myself, but I mean, I produced the record. I took the tapes
right.
and the original. So I wanted to find, and I'm hoping that maybe we'll make the record in Nashville.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, last time we talked, you said you're working on an album with a Juilliard pianist named Donald Vega. Whatever happened to that?
It's sitting in the can. I never quite finished it. And I kind of ran into a dead end. It's more of a jazz
right.
album. But I think I started writing new things. I wrote some things for that album, kind of in a jazz vein.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those albums that didn't want to finish itself. So maybe...
Yeah,
I think this is going much more in a pop singer songwriter or whatever I've always done, whatever you call that music. This is more of it, and a lot of songs about really deep stuff.
Well, we're definitely looking forward to that. You know, some of your songs I do hear a little bit of jazzy influence in there. You must like jazz. Do you
yeah.
like jazz as well? Yeah.
Yeah. It was kind of crazy. I when I moved to Point Reyes with the Youngbloods,
mm-hmm.
so instead of moving to San Francisco, we moved, we're about 45 miles outside of San Francisco. That was after the Summer of Love. We decided we needed to be yeah. there. So I'm on a ridgetop. The only station that came in, my FM receiver, was a jazz station called K-Jazz,
mm-hmm.
a marvelous jazz station. So my ridgetop, I saw this there was an earthquake in San Francisco that blacked out the city.
Right.
87? I can't remember, but I was on my deck and... You know, I looked out 40 miles to the south, and San Francisco was gone. And I realized when the city came back on that the towers, so they must have had a tower for K-Jazz
mm-hmm. right.
that just was pointed at my ridgetop. But that was the only thing. And I had never listened to jazz. And all of a sudden, that was all that was coming in on the radio, and I became... The next 10 years.
An expert.
during the Youngbloods, yeah, I listened to jazz. And then, right after the Youngbloods, Song for Julie, here comes
yep.
Jim Rothermel, his gorgeous sax playing that is, and sax and flute playing that's all over Song for Julie. And so that listening, in a, we were able to bring it into the music. So this new band, yeah, I haven't had a sax player in the band since Jimmy. And,
I love sax. Yeah, I love sax.
This new band will have a sax player, sax and flute, and yep. So when we
do
things, as we will from Julie.
Yeah, we're all excited.
Like Rich Stock.
Yeah. Well, we got to talk about one of the most important songs of all time, and I know the history behind it. Get Together.
Mm-hmm.
It all began, I guess, at Cafe Ogogo, when you were you went there, you watched people rehearse, the Blues Project rehearsed there, and then you walked into an open mic session, and
right.
there was a guy named Buzzy Linhart, right, who had a quartet
right.
called the Seventh Sons, and he was the one who was singing, I guess, Get Together, and
mm-hmm.
that's where it all started, right?
Yeah, I went backstage, and I said, Buzz, I got to write the lyrics. I had met him. I heard him perform with Tim Harden. He was a vibes player also. But,
right.
Yeah, I said, I got to have the lyrics, man. So he wrote them out for me, and the changes are pretty simple. I think I memorized the, at least what I thought was the melody. And next day I took it together into a rehearsal of the Youngbloods there on that same stage in the afternoon when there was no people there. Yeah.
Yeah. What a legendary song that is. I mean, it's timeless. You can play that in any decade, and it would fit just about any situation because, you know, there's never peace in this world, unfortunately.
No, there's never peace. You know, and I was surprised to find out, my doctor over here in South Carolina said, you know, the Kingston Trio recorded that before you. I said, nah, they didn't, did they? And yes, they did.
Really? I didn't know that.
And I know the Jefferson Airplane recorded it, and yeah, the Kingston Trio, because he came back, he went into his, on the internet and came back. So it was recorded before that, because I guess everyone realized that it was what a beautiful song it was, but it didn't click until we recorded it, and I listened to it. It was a magic time.
Magic time.
Yeah.
And that was written by the Dino Valenti from Quicksilver, right?
Right. He had that was before Quicksilver. He was in the Village, and he became kind of a legendary folk singer there. And he left for the West Coast probably 2 years before Youngbloods did, but he left that song in the Village, and there it was sitting there waiting for me. Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? It's amazing how things like that work out.
Yeah.
It's like written in a script.
And, yeah.
Darkness, another timeless hit. Was Charlie Daniels, did he sing it? Was that him in the intro of Darkness, Darkness?
No, that was David Lindley, but Charlie produced Elephant Mountain.
Okay.
He was working, an assistant with Bob Johnston.
Right.
And Johnston was doing, you know, Simon and Garfunkel and Dylan. And, and we wanted him, and he sent us Charlie. And that was a real blessing. Because Charlie and Jerry Corbett, soon after we started Elephant Mountain, Jerry Corbett, my pal who I started the band with, left the band. Yeah. And he went off to play. He and Charlie formed the Corbett Daniels Band. And they and Jerry produced a Charlie record, and Charlie produced a Jerry record. And they went off and toured together and started to climb up from obscurity. And then, you know, just when it got good, it seemed like Jerry left that too. And then, of course, Charlie became a big star.
Right.
I kind of wish Jerry'd hung in there, but, you know, poets got to follow their own breed.
Exactly. And Darkness, Darkness was covered by so many legends. Mata Hoople, Eric Burdon, Richie Havens, Golden Earring, Ann Wilson of Heart, Robert Plant, of course. Yeah.
And a beautiful rendition done a few years ago, I guess about 10 years ago, by an Irish band. I forget the name of them. Or I think there may be a Scottish band, because they said, and now for a song from that famous Scottish songwriter, Jesse Colin Young, and when they were doing live stuff on NPR over here, they did a beautiful version, you know, more like a traditional string band.
Right, right. You had a guy named Bobby Scott, which is, you know, it's a shame. So many of these guys that were legends back then died so young. You know, and he's one of them. You know, and I look at a lot of the R&B guys, you know, that died really, really young. It's you know, I just imagine if these guys were still around. You know, but Bobby Scott called you Pigfoot, and he always wanted you. Didn't he mention that he wanted you to do some Marvin Gaye stuff, which you did on YouTube, I found you singing What's Going On and Mercy, Mercy Me. Did you do that after Bobby passed away?
Yeah.
Or was that...
Yes. When I was doing a folk singer, I think I came into his office once and he said, he was over at Mercury at that point, and Quincy
right.
Jones was running Mercury there. And Bobby gave me the dollar and said, go buy a Marvin Gaye record, man. You could do some of this stuff. But this was 1965.
Right.
Or maybe it was 62, because, you know, 66, I think, is when What's Going On and Mercy, Mercy Me came out. Mm-hmm. Or 67, I'm not sure. But within 6 months of Lennon releasing Imagine.
Right.
Those two records. And it's funny, Marvin, I never heard anything else but love songs out of him, except those two exceptional songs about the environment and about Vietnam.
Yep. Well, you know, everyone needs to go on YouTube and pull up your cover version of Marvin Gaye's What's Going On to Mercy, Mercy. You did a great job with that. You actually did a real nice job with that.
Yes, I had that wonderful horn player, Jim Othermel, that. Yes, we put them together because they belong together. And yes, as a matter of fact, I think we're going to, my wife Connie said to me, you know, you should do the Marvin Gaye medley with this new band.
Definitely.
So we were practicing it. I haven't played it since then. I had to go back and learn the chords. Mm-hmm. And not the chords to the song, pretty simple, but all those passages in between the two songs.
Right.
Yeah. I was, you know, 3 days ago I was in here saying, is that an E flat? What is that? I figured him out.
Yeah, Marvin Gaye was a great drummer. A lot of people didn't know that, but he was a very,
really?
Good drummer. Yeah. Yep.
I never heard that.
Yeah, I think it was Billy Cobham that told me that.
Wow.
Yeah. I like your statement, too, about rebelling against the crew cuts. And, you know, and I think history can repeat itself, because I think musically we're kind of about where we were back then, like in the early 60s, you know, like when things weren't really happening, you know. And, you know, people, they're not expressing themselves anymore like they used to. I mean, it was so cool to have long hair and bell bottoms and, you know, things like that. Everybody looks the same nowadays. You know?
Well, maybe we're due for another. I mean, because we were coming out of the 50s and...
Right.
You know, 50s, this is post-World War II, and a lot of crew cuts, and a lot of men having, every other dad had served, you know, in the war.
True.
So it was a time, not of rebellion, but of conformity, and just enjoying the fact that you're not being shot at, and then you can afford a house in Levittown. And and raise your family, and it was perfect for that.
Yeah, but how cool was it to grow your hair long and make it? You know, I mean, the styles then were awesome. They were, you know, I mean, I was like 8 years old, and I wore a Dickie and you know, I had a Beatle haircut, you know, Beatle boots.
Well, it was very infectious. You know, you
it
got
was
a lot of grief.
Yeah.
You got a lot of grief in the beginning. Men would yell at you in the street, you know, get a haircut.
But then our fathers started dressing like that. You know, I remember my dad had the long sideburns, and he grew his hair out a little bit longer, and, you know, everybody was into it at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you still have the, I don't know if it's a poster of those four guys over your desk? Lightning Hopkins holding a flask in his hand, John Hurt, Pete Seeger, and then you had in the corner you had Jerry Corbett, and you're here in the corner you had let's say Yo-Yo Ma, and Jerry Corbett was part of that group over your desk. You still have that?
Yep.
What is it?
That's
picture or poster?
That's the group,
right?
It starts with T-Bone.
Right.
I've got T-Bone Walker and then Walker. Lightning with a Flask, and the Mississippi John Hurts, his album cover from Today, that beautiful black and white was taken. And then Pete, who was still alive at the time, but I put him up there. And then a picture of Corbin and I playing together.
Oh, cool.
Probably back in the 90s.
Right.
Sent to me by an old friend named Kim Shaw, who used to produce us in Eastern Oregon. I mean, he was the only person who was doing shows out there. I guess it was Ben. There's Corbett and I. And
you
of course,
were,
Uriel Thorner here.
You knew Lightning Hopkins, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
He was great. I mean, timeless classics, Baby Please Don't Go, Bring Me My Shotgun, Woke Up This Morning. I mean, the list goes on and on. He was awesome.
Yep, I was 18 probably when I met Lightning. And, guys like John Sebastian and I were just living in the village or on the Lower East Side. And when when the folk singers would come in and the old blues guys would come in, they would stay at somebody's house.
Yep.
I mean, nobody could afford a hotel. You know, they're probably getting paid $250 a week or whatever, which was a lot bigger money than that is today. But so word would get out, and those of us who were learning that music would just, go and hang out with them and listen.
How cool was that, huh?
Yeah. I remember John had his famous holster. He had this holster that went around his whole body, made out of leather like a pistol holster, except it was for harmonicas. And I had never seen anything like that.
Huh.
I had never realized that the little blues harps were only able to be used in one or two keys. So if you were going to play in all keys, you needed 15 or 20 harps, and John wore those around his body like a bandolier or whatever. And I saw him play with Lightning.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, these are stories that you tell your grandkids, grandkids.
Yeah, so, they'll say Lightning who?
Yeah, who's Lightning?
It was interesting. I talked to Jackson Brown once after my house burned down, and he was one of the few people that called me and kind of chased me around. When your house burns down, of course, in those days, did I have a cell phone? I don't know. Yeah, I probably did, but it was not like it is today. And there goes your house burns down. Your home phone is gone, and so it was hard to get a hold of me, and somehow he found me in Hawaii, and he said, I didn't know you knew Lightning. He said, I got to send you a videotape, and he sent me this wonderful little movie called The World According, I think it's called The World According to Lightning Hopkins.
Really?
Which just, was done down in Texas, and it's got...
Yep.
Some interviews with Lightning, and then him playing at house parties. Of course, he was gone, but not forgotten.
Yep. Well, one of the true legends of rock and roll and blues. That's where it all started, from guys like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you still talk to Banana at all?
Occasionally, I did. I sang on this album he put out where Banana remembers the Youngbloods.
Right.
That was a difficult time. My buddy Jerry had just died of cancer.
Yeah.
Corbett from the Youngbloods. And I was having a hard time. Something was stuck in my throat. I was having a physical reaction to Corbett's death. And
right.
And Banana asked me to sing on that on two or three songs there, and I just put them up in my studio, and I said, man, I don't know how this is going to come out. This may suck, but I'll give you what I got.
Right.
And somehow I was able to sing through that grief. And that was great for me.
Yeah, that was a hard time for you. I remember you talking about it last time we chatted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Ray, I've got a mosey on here.
Okay, Jesse. How's the coffee business?
The coffee business is still wonderful.
Good.
It's, the crop this year is going to be strong.
Good.
T and I will be there, and Connie, of course, in
yep.
in January, pruning the after the harvest is over, and mm-hmm. so it's still available
on
the website, jessecollinyoung.com,
yep.
and it's still as delicious as it ever was.
That's Jesse Colin Young's Morning Sun Coffee.
Yeah. Oh, it's marvelous.
That's awesome. I could use a cup right now.
Yeah.
Jesse, thank you so much for being with
us
today,
brother.
For all the great music. We're looking forward to new music coming up with the new band and some concert dates in the near future. And thank you so much again for being on the show today. I appreciate it.
All right, Ray. My pleasure.
Take care. Be well.
All right. You too.
Bye-bye. This is Jesse Colin Young's official website for all the latest news and show dates at www.jessecolinyoung.com. Visit Jesse Colin Young on Facebook, www.facebook.com/JesseColinYoung. Also visit Jesse on Twitter, twitter.com/JesseColinYoung. Visit Jesse's coffee page, Jesse Colin Young's Morning Sun Coffee at www.jessecolinyoung.com/coffee.php. And also visit Saratoga Warhorse Foundation at www.saratogawarhorse.com. Very special thanks to the great Billy James of Glass Onion PR for arranging this interview with Jesse Colin Young, and to the legends Doug and Don Newsom with BBS Radio for making it all happen every show. Join me bi-weekly Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on The Ray Shasho Show. If you have comments or suggestions or would like to be a guest on The Ray Shasho Show, call 941-877-1552 or email us at ray@publicityworksagency.com. And don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, The True Story of an Eclectic American Family and Their Wacky Family Business, or the second edition entitled Wacky Shenanigans on F Street, Proud to be Politically Incorrect in Washington, D.C., available now at Amazon.com. You'll live it. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to The Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Join Ray Shasho every Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on BBS Radio, Station 1.